Okay, hello, welcome back everyone. We are in interesting locations this time. I'm here in North London, but Calvin's in a much more interesting location.
I'm in the sunny Caribbean, specifically Barbados, where I'm currently sitting on my patio and I'm looking at the sun peeping through clouds after all night tropical rains, working from the sunny island. I'm in the tropics, I'm in paradise, thinking about AI and mindfulness in the paradise.
Wow. And I remember last time you went there, which was like maybe a couple of years ago, there'd been an eruption of a volcano nearby.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, we were recording part of season one and I was here.
Yeah.
So we've come full circle. Mm. And there was a volcano that erupted in St. Vincent of the Grenadines, which sent a ginormous ash cloud across the atmosphere above the islands in the island chain and dumped a whole load of this kind of reddish ash. The sky was red and dark. And I thought, oh, that's what must be from the volcano. And I was hoping it'd blow over. And then the next day, the gutters were overflowing with ash and the rooftops of the houses covered, cars were losing their paint.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I remember you had like a spade and you were literally kind of digging yourself out. It was quite thick, wasn't it? Inches thick of ash cloud.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It was more than inches. I mean, I was carrying away wheelbarrows full of ash. And I mean, considering that we actually don't have volcanoes in this island, it was quite a rare and phenomenal experience. But as I look now onto the landscape, I can see that the landscape appreciated it very much, because all the minerals and everything that comes from the ash is sunk into the earth and enriched the soil. So the plants are luscious and abundant, and there were a lot of fruits the next year of everyone's fruit trees, and the yields were much higher. So, you know, there are upsides, but we were lucky because we didn't actually have any property damage or any destruction the way the local people did where the volcano was.
Wow.
It was an incredible experience.
That's fascinating, really, though, because, like, you know how forest fires are, you know, they have a beneficial effect as well. And I'm thinking probably even earthquakes, probably nature's adapted to, you know, to kind of take some advantage from it, I'm guessing.
I think I've heard the expression before, creative destruction. And yeah. I think the first time I heard that was probably the volcanic eruption in Hawaii a decade ago, I think it was, or so. Don't quote me on the date. But I remember hearing like this expert geologist, and he was saying, you know, what we're actually witnessing right now is creative destruction. We're seeing a lot of destruction of villages and homes and towns, but actually we're witnessing the birthing of new lands and really a new opportunity for life. And that was quite a marvelous encapsulation, which I think is what seems to happen after these destructive, or you know, destructive to our kind of fixed idea of life.
Yeah.
Our, you know, our attachment to our structures. You know, we build a road, we build a house. That must last forever. And if anything changes that, it's highly destructive, of course, to our way of life.
Yeah.
But to the planet, it seems like the planet's just doing its thing.
Yeah. What is destruction? Like, I'm just thinking of even things like, we're going slightly off topic from AI, but even if the destruction of something like a star actually creates and gives birth to new stars, and we were probably, you know, our physical body, at least, I was reading somewhere that the atoms in our body are about 9 billion years old. I thought I was only 46 years old. Turns out I'm much older. Happy 9 billion years to you.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, from the destruction of a star, it creates the different heavy elements that create us.
Well, I mean, interestingly, it's not that far off of the AI subject, because, you know, a lot of people are saying, as we're entering into this new phase, actually, we could be witnessing the destruction of the human species, or Homo sapiens. Yeah. not necessarily the destruction of life or human existence per se, but that the species Homo sapiens are forever being changed, and even maybe a new species might be coming, might be around the corner. Yeah. We might be witnessing the birth of a new species, potentially a human species. So actually, you know, not that far away as you originally thought.
What should we call it? Should we call it Homo Chat GPT? Homo Chat GPT?
Homo Silicon Chippus.
Good one. Yeah. But I think your friend, and I've also read about how the next phase of human evolution, like if we are to survive as AI gets more and more intelligent, would be to actually merge with it. And that's going to naturally happen. And maybe it's already starting to happen, because I know the company Neuralink is starting to put, you know, chips into people's brains, especially people who have disabilities, to try and help them to navigate the world. That's one of Elon Musk's companies, and maybe that's the first step in which technology starts to actually enter into the physical body of human beings.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in some ways we're kind of coming full circle now to episode 1 of season 2, episode 2 rather. It was very early on when we were in Deer Park Monastery, and we were talking about, you know, how technology becoming part of humans can help with some of these qualities like compassion, or, you know, train in a very practical way, train people to adopt the brain states of someone maybe who is enlightened or certain brain frequencies and so on. So, I mean, we're not a million miles away from this merging already. I mean, think how hard it is to actually go anywhere without your phone.
Yeah. I was going to say that, actually. Yeah. Not that many people function without a phone in their pocket nowadays, right?
Yeah. Feel completely naked, and in some cases, like you've lost a limb.
Yeah.
And actually, people grieve when they go, and they're like, oh, my phone, oh my God. So we're practically, for all intents and purposes, already merged psychologically with the technology, just not physiologically yet. And so that's the easy part, I would say, having psychologically merged. Then just having it stuck to you is pretty easy.
Yeah. Interesting. I was also thinking back to that episode when we recorded it in America, suggesting that, you know, ChatGPT, it would be good if it could actually understand our values. And so when it responds to us appropriately to our values and give solutions and remind us about our values and what's important to us or what we believe, it does actually have that function now. There's a section, I think, custom instructions, and you can say a little bit more about yourself, who you are and what you're passionate about and what your values are. Maybe you can put your goals in, whatever you want. And then the responses it gives is actually reflecting your values. So, you know, it tries to suggest ideas to me that are more maybe compassionate or creative or involve more connections. It reminds me about, you know, philosophies of mindfulness or non-duality in its answers, which I think is fascinating, and it's a nice direction it's going in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated by some of these emerging use cases for, you know, in this season, I think we discovered a lot more, shall we say, mindful uses of AI than I originally anticipated.
Interesting.
There are things to help people, as we had in our last episode with Dr. Jim Doty, with compassion and self-compassion. We, you know, there's stuff about loving AI, and there's the opportunity, it seems, to enhance some of these qualities in us using the AI. It's like when you have a friend, right? And you decide, well, look, what kind of friendship do I want to have? I want to be intentional about this friendship or any relationship. And rather than nitpick and complain about how awful this friend is, or, you know, negative bias towards my friend's qualities, I'm actually looking for all the good qualities in that person or my partner or any relationship that I might have to nurture it. I'm looking for the good qualities. What's great about them? you know, what's loving about them? How sharing and kind and compassionate and so on and so on and so on. And it seems like there's some AI friends that are developing in a similar way, looking for those qualities or trying to water those seeds in us that are already there. And the AI tool is just being trained to help us call that forth more. So I was pleasantly surprised in some of these discoveries, like the Jim Doty stuff, like, you know, the happy AI, like the loving AI, like the values stuff. There's some interesting developments.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? What does that mean for us? Actually, does it mean we become, you know, homo silicon chippers? And is homo silicon chippers a good thing? Actually, you know what, Shamash? I'm doing this deep listening training right now, and I'm nearly finished my teacher certification. And I literally read an excerpt a couple of days ago for a reflection that I had to submit. And it was one line, and it said, you know, that invariably we are going to merge with these technologies for the future. And the question in the invitation of the writing was, to what end, or how would you want to use this capability, this new capacity? But then it came with another part of the reflection where it said, but you know, us as human organic machines, we just need to be very careful about permanently changing the species with a technology that's only, meaning silicon, that's only been, you know, around 50 to 100 years. You're merging a 50 to 100 year technology with billion year technology. And that permanent change can, we just need to be extremely thoughtful about that. I don't think I'm saying anything new or revolutionary here. Yeah. Right? You've been saying that. We've been saying that. But as you bring up the question of merging,
that's a good way of thinking about the, you know, the length of evolution, that, you know, organic evolution. We could even think of ourselves as organic machines, if you want, just for argument's sake. So yes, it's been evolving for several billion years, and now, you know. But do you think? Yeah, it seems to be just a natural next step of evolution, doesn't it? It's not something, because when we first started this series, you know, we did it because if we were noticing how, you know, it was becoming more in the news about AI, and ChatGPT was actually starting to become a helpful thing, and we're starting to use it a bit more. And so we thought, okay, we need to be careful about the dangers of this, or maybe we need to think about, do we want to, should we even be using it? And what's going to happen in the future? Is it going to take over the human race? But our discussion has shifted from that to, it's actually inevitable. Everyone's going to be using it. We need to be conscious about it, but it's very likely we're going to be using it, and we are using it. So how do we, we're actually literally discussing about how do we merge with it in a conscious way, which may sound quite crazy, but it's an interesting direction our conversations are going in. Don't you think? From portion to this, actually this has already happened now, and how, what's going to happen as we start to merge with it.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Good reflection. Yeah, caution, definitely. Maybe we could even say cautious optimism.
Yes.
And the reason I think that's appropriate is because, well, you and I were optimistic, so we have to serve that in there somehow.
I think you're being a bit optimistic there.
You know, my glass is neither half full or half empty. I just cut the glass in half every time. But yeah, so I think there is that cautious optimism around, as we explore this subject of merging with the technology. Is it inevitability? I think it's a very, very, very high likelihood based on not only the direction of travel, but it seems based on the fact that technological progress is actually not a bad thing. For every generation, there's always been a question as to what level of technological progress do we deem acceptable? And this is probably the first time where people have questioned whether the technological process, or progress rather, is existential, is a question of our own existence, is threatening us, is threatening, is an existential threat to humans. And that reminded me of the joke we had when we were at the Spirituality and AI dinner. And somebody said, oh, you're, somebody quoted somebody else in a discussion we were having saying, oh, you're just speciesist because, you know, actually, you know, your preservation, this is what the person was saying, your worry and fear is only about the preservation of human life. It's not really worried about all life. It's not really worried about the well-being of the planet, let's say, or anything like that. It's just worried about human self-preservation as a collective. And what if the human self-preservation, you know, we asked this to Trevor Murphy in one of the episodes when we were walking,
yeah.
You know, well, if humans were to become extinct, let's say, the human species as we know it were to become extinct, or certainly a minority or less dominant species on the planet and another life form or more dominant species were to arise, would that be such a bad thing for the planet and all other life? And the answer is still not clear.
Yeah, it's still not clear. Yeah, it all so depends on what level you zoom in or out on. You know, we can think on the level of human beings, and then, you know, there's this desire for us to continue as a species. But then if you look on the global planet as a whole, then it's more like the whole planet Earth is a living system. You know, this theory of Gaia, that the whole Earth is a living system, and it's constantly seeking balance and harmony. And if any one species becomes too dominant, and it could actually lead to its own destruction naturally because of the way the resources are balanced out. So yeah, and then if you zoom out further to, you know, the solar system or the galaxy, then, you know, it makes almost no difference at all if you look on that level. And as you zoom out more, zoom out less, it just depends on your perspective. And yeah, it comes back to what angle you're looking at things. And it's not so much about right or wrong, but it's actually knowing that, you know, we can get very easily caught up in one perspective, in one way of seeing. And part of maybe more conscious living, you could call it, is, you know, looking at things by zooming in further and further and further to see what's the reality there, what's actually everything made up of, and actually also zooming out as far as you can and seeing things from a very big picture. And sometimes our worries and challenges and things that we're concerned about are just at one level, but seen from a different perspective, it's not so much of an issue. It's not to say that's right or wrong, but it's good to have that flexibility of viewpoint, I think.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, at a cosmic scale, and this is one of your main teachings about perspective taking, isn't it? You know, it's taking the perspectives from not just different people or from different angles, but from different distances even. I mean, imagine the warfare that's going on right now in your gut with the, you know, the 8 billion bacteria on the planet inside your gut.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much going on right there. We're not even thinking about it. Does a single bacteria inside our gut even know that we're having this conversation? So I guess
that's funny that you mentioned that. I was literally just looking up this week because there was originally a theory that there was 100 times more bacteria than human cells in a human being. And then they kind of recalculated it, and it's more like 38 trillion bacteria cells for every something like 30 trillion human cells. So we're more bacteria than human beings. And I was having this theory that actually the bacteria, because we've originally evolved from bacteria too, physically. So I had this theory that actually the bacteria have evolved human beings. So as human beings start to become more intelligent and travel around the planet, the bacteria can actually spread throughout the planet. So we're more bacteria cells than human cells. So you can't really say that we're human. We're actually bacteria walking around.
Yeah, that's a fascinating idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then it brings us to the really interesting reflection, which is that if we're not really human, or only, you know, 40% of us, let's make up a number and say the minority part of our physical anatomy is actually human, the majority is actually alien, then why are we so attached to what happens to our forms?
Yeah.
What causes that real deep existential fear? Which is, I think, is the root of a lot of the discussion around AI and its implications on the planet and for human society. So what do you think about, you know, freeing oneself from fear and the mindset that fear can lock us into? You know, is that to do with this this duality, this sort of dualistic way of looking at things? Or what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so on the concept of fear in general, as well as specifically, to have fear, there needs to be some duality. You need to see things in duality or project into the future or the past. But if we talk about the specific fear, let's say the fear of merging with technology, that's an interesting one. Yeah. And I think most people will probably have a natural fear about that, because we think of ourselves as human beings. We think of ourselves not as bacteria with some human element, or we don't think of ourselves as water, and or we don't think of ourselves as made up of the atoms. You know, just to like, let's say 100 different types of atoms that have been combined together to create the human being. We don't really closely examine who we are and look closer into what is our identity. And so from this lack of clarity, we see other and create fear. And other could be other, you know, other people, other tribes, other countries, and then also technology as an other. And it's fear that, oh my God, if this starts to merge with me, then what's going to happen to the me? What's going to happen to the human beings? We're going to end
the 40% of human beings. Since only 40% of
people don't say it like that, right? We don't think of ourselves as, and we don't even consider the influences we have by our environment. So most people think that when they make decisions, they're completely independent and not dependent on anything else from their surroundings. Like, they are making this decision. Whereas more and more and more evidence suggests that our environment has a massive influence. Our genes have a massive influence. Our past history, what we had for breakfast, all these different things are influencing even the choices that we make. But it's, I think what evolution has created is this ego and this sense of personal identity, this false sense of identity, and that actually generates loads of fear, because if we think we have to get things right and we have to do things properly, and that we think that we're separate from everything else, and we take praise when things go well and we take lots of blame when things go wrong, so we identify so much, and at its core this sense of personal identity, and that generates lots of fear. But and AI is just another one of those things that generates fear, because we think of it as other, and probably all the films that people have seen about it as well.
Yeah. Do you think it actually could be a way for humans to experience non-duality in a different way? You know, for example, you know, the ego construct, or the sense of self, or the I that I think is me, which is only 40% human anyway. Do you think that, you know, this merging, let's imagine a scenario where we do become cyborgs and we do create a new human species, you know, Homo silicon. Do you think that could help with the disidentification with the physical form and the disidentification with the conceptual I, the you know, the egoic identity? Or do you think it could be the same, actually, and we just think that this metal arm or, you know, this mechanical titanium chip inside of us is also us, just like we think the 60% of bacteria, and I'm using 60% as a gross generalization, but 60% of the bacteria, like, as we think that is also us because it's inside and merged with our human cells. Do you think the same risk exists maybe with if we're a cyborg, for let's say, or maybe there's an opportunity to free ourselves from the
I'm quite hopeful about that, actually. It's a really good question. And, you know, with the advent of the internet and more information available, you know, different philosophies became more accessible to more people. And I think there is the opportunity for people to think differently and understand things better. Whereas in the past, let's say scriptures and certain spiritual teachings, they were isolated in groups of 150 people, and that information would rarely spread from one tribe to another. So as we continue to kind of grow in intelligence, you could say, I'm hoping that, you know, people start to think a bit more deeply and understand themselves a bit more. And, you know, they do say that violence has actually been going down. I know it looks like it's going up and up and up, but the statistics show that the amount of people that have been killed in wars is actually going down and down and down all the time. So it may continue to do that. Although it may look like the opposite is happening, actually violence might go down. Perhaps even our sense of ego will start to diminish. Who knows? I'm hopeful about that, actually.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, the thought just came up just now as you were talking about duality and the fear that arises with duality. And I was wondering whether there was an opportunity to free oneself from that fear and to connect more with the oneness, to, or maybe the help with the realization of the oneness of all life, of all things, and whether that would be more likely in the case of a cyborg reality or less likely. Or the same, actually.
So,
potentially it could help, especially if we're talking about the technologies that, you know, we heard about from our friend in Deer Park Monastery in episode 2, who's talking about these technologies helping us to access brain states equivalent to, you know, Olympic level meditators and people who've reached these kind of states of seeing and being, which recognize our oneness, potentially our connectedness, the consciousness underlying all things. Maybe that becomes easier.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, people access it through drugs as well, right? You know, they take certain drugs and you suddenly, that left part of your brain kind of shuts down a little bit and you start to feel this sense of oneness and connection. And that's actually, I think that's, some people benefit from that. They have that amazing experience. They realize that actually we've got a part of our brain, our language, which labels everything and separates everything. But that's kind of a machinery that's not reality. That's something that we've been taught. And so they go on a path of spirituality or meditation to help them to kind of reconnect with that sense of oneness, or they continue taking more drugs, whatever it is for them. But yeah, maybe there'll be an AI version of that. Maybe there will be a way to kind of tune in so we're more connected with this sense of non-duality, a sense of oneness and connection and harmony. Yeah. But the interesting thing,
well, you know,
why has it evolved in the first place? Why have we got this ego that creates separation? And maybe there was some evolutionary advantage of seeing, you know, separating ourselves from others, or identifying with our tribe and seeing the other tribe as bad and evil, as it's because it's the other, from a survival perspective. And maybe that was useful at that time, but as we start to be part of this bigger global community, that wisdom may start to grow that actually it's not so helpful, and this illusion of separation is something that we need to notice and just have that, just tune into that inner insight that it's just a way of seeing things. It's not a reality. It's just, yeah, it's just a construct of our mind.
Yeah. What you're making me think about too, in addition to that, and that's really a beautifully, cautiously optimistic tale. And I love, and I hope that works out. And I was wondering about the heart piece, actually, you know, because we talk so much about the brain and what AI is going to do for the brain. It's the whole computational side of it, you know, the algorithmic side.
Yeah.
But the heart part, the intuitive side, that will always remain biological, will it?
Interesting. Well, I think the intuitive side of human beings is our unconscious or our subconscious. So we're taking in loads of information through our senses, and there's so many complex functions happening in the human body that we're just not conscious of, right? We're conscious of the 0.01%, and that's our consciousness. And it's like an iceberg. Most of it is kind of running by itself. And even the conscious bit is kind of running by itself, but we take ownership of it. We claim that, you know, I'm doing the thinking and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. So the intuition is actually coming, that information coming from the subconscious or unconscious, all that information, it's being processed and it's telling us what to do. So you've got this intuitive feeling that you should work on this next project, or you should hang out with this person, or you should go to this country, or whatever it is. So in theory, if that's how intuition works, then AI would be able to do that. Artificial intelligence would be do that, because it would be able to take in huge amounts of information and come up with a decision. It's quite fun, actually. Like, I played with ChatGPT, where I say, you know, look at all the different spiritual traditions, and can you summarize all the insights of all the spiritual traditions in a sentence? And it would be able to come up with a sentence. And it's, in a way, it's almost like an intuitive answer. And it was quite, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was about working out who you are, being clear about your sense of who you are.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so it can take huge amounts of data. They call it large language models. So they take all this kind of data and they can summarize it into a small thing and can help you even make a decision. And I think it's quite similar to intuition.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on also, like, what if the intuition is, I have no idea about this science at all, or I'm not well researched in this area, so I'm literally making up what is coming up right now.
Are you using your intuition?
Yeah. There's this whole part of computing now called the quantum computing. And, you know, quantum physics, quantum mechanics, and this whole exploration of the quantum field is an arising and growing area, which is fairly modern for human scientific endeavor. And none of that is actually kind of, it's not already in language, it's not already in some physically manifested form. That's in the state before a reality might manifest. And so I wonder whether this kind of taking in of information and deciding what's the best thing to do is really only computational, or whether there's some kind of energetic sensing that's happening even before things manifest, like a premonition, for example.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people have these premonitions. They have a dream, or they have some way of seeing something that's going to occur, but that thing is not yet manifested. And is that using lots of data of things that have already happened and then decided, well, this is most likely, like William Hill betting or something like that? Or is there something else undescribed taking place that we have not yet? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a part that we still something haven't non-physical. Really understood.
Some sort of non-physical. Well, one thing that I'm not sure if this is a direct answer to your question. That's a good one. So, you know, there's two ways of seeing intuition, I guess. So one is that it is happening through just actual physical information. And the other way is that it has some sort of spiritual dimension, which is non-physical and can even see into the future, for example. And I'm not sure. But I've been looking at a little bit of quantum physics recently, especially about time, and what does quantum physics think about time? And actually, there's some quantum physics that's showing that, you know, it doesn't flow. It's not like we're in the present moment now and that's it. It's like the past, the present, and the future are connected, and they've even managed to make things move through time. So they just a bit like Back to the Future. So you've got these quantum states which can, you can go into the future, you can go into the past. And when you change the past, it changes the future or the present. So, and even time itself is not, it is an illusion that us human beings experience. It's not really time, it's space-time, first of all. So time and space are completely linked together. They're not separate entities, and they're kind of an illusion as well, according to the latest science. So, I don't know, but it's possible, and that's actually possible from a scientific perspective, potentially, because of quantum science and quantum physics is not something that is kind of airy-fairy, it doesn't exist. It's literally it's the best science that underlies reality. It's basically what reality is. It's not, we're not living in a clockwork mechanical universe. We're living in a very weird, deeply connected, potentially, universe. And very mysterious as well, because consciousness, as part of the mix, which really doesn't make sense from a material world. How does consciousness arise from physicality? So I don't know the answer to your question, but this, I just wanted to share a little bit about how mysterious this
thing
that we call universe is. It's fascinating, really, really fascinating.
Mystery within mystery, as Lao Tzu would say.
Yeah,
I think we've got our next 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 episodes. I think we've got the subject for the next 4,000 or 5,000 episodes sorted out.
Yeah, now, our next series, we don't have to even do it. ChatGPT can just talk to itself and we'll just listen. Welcome to series three of the Mindful Conversations.
Yeah, well, this is a very interesting time, and I'm actually wondering now, if you were to, you know, so we've come to the end of season two, we've talked about all kinds of subjects around AI and mindfulness and how we can develop, you know, around the seven C's and compassion and creativity. We've had a wide exploration. If you were to summarize season two for you, what your experience of the season was, or maybe your biggest insight or takeaway, or any other way you feel, you know, you would like to summarize our experience from April to now, since Wisdom 2.0, obviously predicated on all of our conversations that we've been having beforehand.
Yeah.
How would you encapsulate it?
Well, interesting. Brilliant question. I would say that when I went into creating this series, it was more from the perspective of some fear there that this technology is going to grow really rapidly, and before we know it, it's going to take over us. The intelligence is going to go beyond human intelligence, and most people don't believe that because they don't understand we can't intuitively understand how rapidly technology grows and develops, and it's growing in an exponential rate. And I found my actual experience of like trying to follow it all was actually kind of quite overwhelming at the beginning too. But having kind of gone through the experience of creating this series as we've been watching all these different technologies popping up, it's about seeing things more from a bigger picture. Everything is evolving. Like, evolution seems to be on planet Earth the way it works. We don't have a choice about that, and technology also evolves, and we just find that this evolution is happening. It was not something we can press stop button on. No one's really stopped evolution. It's part of the intelligence of the universe, and it's less about trying to control it so much and being more of a curious observer and noticing how we may be drawn to using it and engaging with it. And it's nice to connect with others, to talk about it and reflect on it, and hopefully as a human race we'll be able to get together to take it seriously and think about how we're going to manage it, and actually just enjoy the ride, because it's gonna happen whether we like it or not, to watch it and observe and see what happens, and if you can influence it and nudge it in a direction which is more meaningful and more in line with what matters to you. You know, if creativity matters to you, then tuning with that. If it's about compassion, how can you use this technology to create a more compassionate world? So engaging with it in a way that's meaningful for you is beautiful, and that seems to be what we've been seeing happening as well. So I've been enjoying that. How about for you? What would you say are the perhaps the highlights or the interesting elements, or maybe you have some conclusion?
I think you just helped me listening to you there. And also what was evoked was, there's this series called Snowpiercer, which is based on a book actually, of the Earth was plunged into an ice age, and this train of 1,001 carriages was made to preserve the last vestiges of human civilization. And I mean, it's fascinating because it was all the intrigue and the class segregation and all of this stuff that was happening on the train that made the film entertaining. But I imagine, and I was listening to you, and I somehow got this image that, look, we're on this train. This train is moving. and we can't get off. On Snowpiercer, it was the temperatures outside were so cold because of this ice age. If anybody went outside, they would instantly freeze and shatter into, you know, a million pieces of ice particles. So it was like, we're on this train. We can't get off. We're here. We're here now in this space at this time. This journey is happening. And you talked about this nudging of this consciously shaping of the journey. And it feels to me like as we're on this train, the only thing that we have the power to influence is what the quality of the experience on the train is going to be like for the duration of that journey. And so I would concur that there is a piece here around shaping the quality of that journey and shaping the experience, trying to be more conscious about it. And I really like this part that you talked about realizing that the fear response to these changes are rooted in duality, are rooted in actually a kind of illusion. Some, you know, I hesitate to just outright just say illusion, and then because I don't want to make it sound like what when people do experience fear or when we do have these fear responses that they're not really happening. But at the ultimate level, like you say, you know, there is an underlying consciousness or oneness that seems to be a really small, thin, but very strong thread of this conversation as we started in the monastery and moved all the way through to creativity and to compassion and all of these things. It's still about that connectedness. It's still about that oneness. It's still about that desire to shape the quality of the journey. So I would conclude by echoing you, really, about shaping it as consciously as we can. I am not a technical person in by any means, so I certainly can't comment on what should happen from a technical point of view, but we're still on the train anyway. So,
it's a good metaphor, that train. Yeah.
Yeah, what's in our gift to influence the quality of that ride?
Yeah.
And I think that's where I've sort of landed with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great place to finish. Enjoy the ride, I guess, is the conclusion. We can summarize enjoy it in three ride. Words.
Enjoy AI, the ride. Come back for season three and land with us.
Thanks a lot, Cameron. It's been really fun doing this series, and it's taken us to all different parts of the world as well, which I wasn't expecting. So that's been really fun.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it's been fantastic. Thank you so much.
And I'd love to hear from the listeners. You know, what did you think? What were your thoughts? We're also doing this different style of podcasting, I guess, with less planning and more emergent this episode. I've enjoyed that. So let us know what you thought about that too. And I guess some ideas about potential season three.
Yeah, that would be
still
great.
On the train.
Yeah. Still on the train. The train ride is ongoing. So definitely let us know what you thought of the season and what you'd like to hear for season three. We'd love to have that. And Shamash, has been a real pleasure. I'm just enjoying these conversations more and more. Every day it just gets better and better. Yeah. You know, you think, well, you know, can it get better? And it does get better. So thank you as well.
Cheers, Gavin. All right, we'll continue enjoying the sunshine and I'll continue enjoying the rain. And you've been listening to Mindful Conversations, and we look forward to reconnecting with you. Thank you so much for listening and following.
Bye for now.
Bye.